Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast, and hear from the minds transforming healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more with the help of AI. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
What's up, this your boy Lil Duval, and check out my podcast, Conversations with Unc, on the Black Effect Podcast Network. Each and every Tuesday, Conversations with Unc podcast feature casual and in-depth talk about ebbs and flows of life and the pursuit of happiness. Unlike my work on stage, I tap into a more serious and sensitive side to give life advice and simply offer words of encouragement, yet remind folks to never forget to laugh. Every Tuesday, listen to Conversations with Unc, hosted by Lil Duval on the Black Effect Podcast Network, iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Presented by AT&T. Connecting changes everything.
I'm Katia Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Get in touch with technology with Tech Stuff from HowStuffWorks.com.
Hey there, and welcome to Tech Stuff. I'm your host, Jonathan Strickland. I'm an executive producer with HowStuffWorks, and I love all things tech. And back on October 26th, 2011, my co-host Chris Paulette and I sat down in a tiny little alcove at the then headquarters of How Stuff Works in Buckhead, Georgia, Buckhead, Atlanta. I'm kind of glad we're not in that particular alcove now. I'm in a much nicer studio, but we sat down to talk about how metal detectors work. What is the operating principle behind metal detectors? What's the science behind it? So you're about to enjoy this classic episode of Tech Stuff, How Metal Detectors Work, and I'll talk to you again in just a moment.
So today we are going to talk about, this was a topic that I don't know that anyone has ever requested. It came to me actually as I was looking through stuff in my basement and went, metal detectors. We should talk about, we've never talked about metal detectors. Actually, we've sort of talked about metal detectors because metal detectors use a lot of the technology we talked about before, especially the relationship of magnetism and to electricity.
Yeah.
It's something that we run into very often, especially if we travel and walk through the metal detectors at the airport.
Right. If we're not getting backscattered.
Or, dropping stuff that you can't find, losing your wedding ring in the mulch outside.
Yikes.
That's good stuff. I've done that.
Wow.
I still have it. So there you go.
I have never lost my wedding ring.
All right. Well, it was only temporary.
Uh-huh.
So anyway, metal detectors.
Let's talk about what they are. We're mostly going to be talking about the kind that you would carry with you.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the portable metal detectors that you would use when looking for, say, loose change on the beach, or searching for that rare Civil War bullet or gun,
yeah,
that might be part of in an area that you knew a battle happened here, so there may very well be stuff here.
Yeah, we should definitely talk about some of the applications of the technology.
Yeah.
And I would like to point out that we have an excellent article on howstuffworks.com if you're interested in learning more.
Yeah, it's called How Metal Detectors Work.
Yeah, it should be pretty easy for people to find, I think.
Written by Jeff Tyson.
Yes.
And it is a very good article and very simple to follow, easy to understand. I would say this is one of those really great How Stuff Works articles.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, you, by the time you get through it, you're like, oh, yeah, no, that totally makes sense.
Yep.
Especially if you have a little bit of grounding in the way electromagnetism works.
Yes.
And conductors and inducers.
Right.
So we'll cover that. I mean, we've talked about it in previous podcasts, but we'll do a quick brush up so that we can explain it. So you want to – let's talk about Jeff does a great job at breaking down what the typical portable – metal detector, the four main parts of one, what they would be.
Yeah, I mean, if you've ever seen people walking around with a metal detector, you sort of know what they look like. They have a roundish part close to the ground.
Right.
That's called the coil.
Yep.
Then you have the coil. Yes, and then you have the stabilizer, which is the part that you actually hold on to holds onto your arm that you see under your arm. Cause you know, frankly, having used a metal detector, it's not the lightest thing.
Right.
On
yeah.
The ground.
This helps distribute the weight somewhat so that you don't feel like you're carrying around a, 10-pound brick the whole time. Because without that, then you would get very tired very quickly.
Yeah. And the aforementioned 10-pound brick, which probably isn't 10 pounds, but it certainly can feel that way after a while. That's the control box.
Yeah.
And you've got all your electronics in there.
Yep.
And then the
connecting bit.
Yes. The long skinny part. That's the shaft.
Yes. It connects the coil at the base to the part that you're holding and of course, the control box. So those are your four basic parts of your basic metal detector.
Yes. And then, you know, you have your headphones because this is one of our episodes of Stuff That Beeps.
Yes.
Stuff What Beeps. And it does, in fact, beep.
Yeah. There's usually some sort of audible alert that you have, in fact, detected metal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, more sophisticated metal detectors will tell you a lot more. Often with, sometimes with an audible tone, but also with a visual, some kind of visual analysis.
Right.
But we can get into that too in a minute.
So there are three main types of metal detectors.
The ones that work.
Three main approaches to metal detection, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
There's the very low frequency, which is probably the most popular or the most common type of metal detector, at least for the portable metal detectors.
When we get into this, you'll see that each of these different types has its own strengths and weaknesses.
Yeah.
And you might say, well, the VLF detector sounds great. Why would you use the others? We'll get into that. The other two are pulse induction.
Yep.
And beat frequency oscillation.
Yeah. I knew a beat frequency oscillator once. He was awesome. Yeah.
Anyway.
No, I think of something else, I guess.
So
that's the beat boxer frequency oscillator.
Yeah. The VLF metal detector is the type that I have.
Okay.
The basic differences in these is you'll see those really in the coils.
Yeah.
To be honest, because a VLF has two different coils. One transmits, and the other is basically an antenna to pick up the signals.
Right.
So, and they're shielded from one another, so it doesn't pick up.
Right. Because otherwise, if you turned it on, you would just have the receiver saying, "Oh my gosh, there's metal everywhere." Holy crap, you're rich.
Wow, even up in the air.
It's literally everywhere. Yeah, that would not be very useful.
I'm taking this back to the store where I bought it.
It's a detector. This does not do me any good.
It's a detectinator.
Yeah, it's a detectinator. Wait, where's Perry? So the the transmitter coil, think of a circle.
Mm-hmm.
All right. It's this circular part at the base of the metal detector.
Right.
And if you were to take it apart, which I do not recommend you do, you would see that there is
You'll avoid your warranty
and it may not work anymore. You will have there's a coil of wire that goes around the perimeter of this circle. Like it's wrapped around. So the circle itself is, let's say it's like a quarter of an inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
And you've got this coil of wire that's coiled around this quarter of an inch all the way around the perimeter of this circle.
Right.
When you run electricity through this coil of wire, what happens besides the fact that electrons are moving through? Because of the nature of electricity and magnetism.
Well, when you run electricity around a coil like that, it generates a magnetic field.
That's right. It does generate a magnetic field. And it generates a magnetic field perpendicular to the direction of the electricity.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the nature of electromagnetism. It's amazing. It's awesome. That's how electromagnets work. And dynamos work in and sort of using this in reverse. So you've got electricity flowing through these coils, and that generates the magnetic field. Well, it doesn't just – the electricity doesn't just flow in one direction.
No, it goes back and forth.
It alternates.
Yeah. Very, very, very fast, almost as fast as I waffle back and forth on what I want to eat for lunch.
And that means that the magnetic field also – alternates. The direction of the magnetic field changes. And if you think of it in terms of the disc, the coil disc being toward the ground, you can think of it as the magnetic field occasionally is pushing against or pulling the ground.
Mm-hmm.
In general, then just think of it that way. That's the direction of the magnetic field while the electricity is going around and around in a circle back and forth in the various directions. And that alternation is happening hundreds of times per second.
Mm-hmm.
So you've got this magnetic field that's just oscillating essentially,
yeah,
right there against the ground. When it comes into contact with something that is metal, well, the metal will start to – that magnetic field will cause a weaker magnetic field to generate around the metal object.
Yeah, it basically induces a magnetic field in a metal object in the ground. So let's say you drop a screw – and when you're trying to build something outside and you're trying to find it with your metal detector so that you don't step on it with a bare foot and, you know, need a trip to the hospital and a tetanus shot.
Right.
So as soon as you run the coil of the vehicle, and you're not trying to touch the ground with it, you really just need it close to the ground.
Yep.
It will find the screw. The screw will basically start inducing
The
metal detector will generate a field, and that will cause the screw to generate its own.
Yeah, a weaker magnetic field.
Oh, yeah, yeah, considerably weaker. But it will, the metal detector, the antenna coil inside the transmitter coil will say, oh, look, there's something right there that is generating a magnetic field. It's right here.
Chris and I have a lot more interesting things to say about metal detectors, but first let's take a quick break to thank our sponsor. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4. Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So if you have a coil of wire and you introduce it into a fluctuating magnetic field, that will induce the flow of electricity within the wire.
Right.
Just as electricity in the wire will generate a magnetic field, a magnetic field will induce electricity to run through wire. Fluctuating magnetic field, it can't just be just a magnetic field. So when the weak magnetic field from the metal object hits the wire in the receiver coil, that generates the electricity, which then alerts the control box. That's why when the control box gets an electric signal from the receiver coil, that says, beep, something is here.
Stuff what beeps.
Yep. Stuff what beeps. So yeah, that's the basic way that a VLF metal detector works. It shoots out this magnetic field. The polarization is alternating, the same as the flow of electricity around the transmitter coil, and then the receiver coil picks up any magnetic fields generated by metal objects that are under the surface of the ground.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty cool.
And generally, it'll go more or less about a foot.
Yeah,
you're not going to find, you know, the Earth's core.
Yeah, and
with a metal detector.
And the depth of the effectiveness of this metal detector is also going to be dependent on other factors, like the nature of the metal object itself. Because some metal objects are going to generate a stronger magnetic field than others, like iron.
Mm-hmm.
It'll also depend on the composition of the soil.
Yes.
So if the soil has a lot of elements in it that would create a magnetic field, you're going to get a lot of interference.
Yeah, or an environment where that would conduct electricity more readily. Like if you were trying to look for something in, say, salt water,
yeah,
you might have more difficulty than if you were looking, you know, on a different type of soil.
Right, right.
Now there is something too called phase shifting.
Yes,
and that's how it's able to tell
what sort of metal it is.
And it really has to do with the inductance and the resistance of the object that you're looking for. Now, yeah. The inductance is the object's ability to conduct electricity. And if it's inductive, it will be able to conduct electricity easily, but it's slow to react to changes in the electrical current.
Right.
If it's resistive, it doesn't conduct electricity as easily, but it is quick to react to those changes. And a sophisticated metal detector will be able to tell you, well, I think that's gold, or
right.
I think that's iron.
Yeah, based upon that phase shift, because the phase shift for a particular element is going to remain constant.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's why if it didn't remain constant, then this wouldn't matter at all, because it wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't know. You know, it's like we just know something is down there. We wouldn't know, have any way of guessing what it is.
Mm-hmm.
But because it's an inherent property of this particular material, and it's really dependent upon the molecular composition of whatever that material is, then we can start making guesses based on that phase shift.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, yeah, the phase shift, you know, with it being that difference in timing between the transmitter's frequency and the frequency of the magnetic wave that's generated by the object, you know, it's, these are sort of ranges.
Yes.
Right? Like
yeah.
if it's a certain range there, then the metal detector can give a best guess as to what that material may be.
Yeah.
So there's never necessarily a guarantee that whatever it is you've detected is specifically going to be, you know, aluminum versus gold or whatever.
Right.
But it's an indicator so that it gives you at least the idea of, you know, is that you measure risk versus reward, right?
Right. Mm-hmm.
The risk of exhausting yourself digging up useless junk versus the reward of possibly finding something that is of true value.
Yes.
So that's really the whole purpose of this anyway, is just, you know, to kind of tune in on that beep and make it more meaningful so that, you know, you don't waste your time digging up little pull tabs from soda cans.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Now, if you have a higher inductance, it's going to create a larger phase shift, and lower inductance has a smaller phase shift. Now, metal detectors use a phase demodulator to read this. And what that creates is discrimination.
Yeah. Yeah.
I know it's terrible, but. Yep. Oh, no, not but that kind
within
of
within metal detectors, it's okay.
Yeah, because the thing is, a good metal detector will allow you to filter out stuff that you don't want.
Right.
Because the metal detector, if you set it at a certain setting and say, you know, I'm really looking for
metals that fall within this range.
Yeah, perhaps gold. I've actually seen metal detector booths. And they'll have like this giant jar of class rings that people have lost.
Oh, nice.
Which is sort of a, you know, reminder that, you know, hey, you can find stuff if you just take your metal. Of course, people look at you funny.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But yeah, that way, let's say that you're out there looking for something specific. You can, you know, some metal detectors have settings where you can tell the metal detector to ignore anything outside of a particular range of frequencies.
Mm-hmm.
So in other words, you might say, I'm only interested in finding silver, let's mm-hmm. say. So what I'll do is I'll set my metal detector so that it'll only alert me if something that generates a magnetic frequency similar to that of silver is encountered by the metal detector. So in other words, you might pass over a gold deposit and nothing happens.
Right.
But as soon as you go over that silver half dollar, ba-ding, and then you dig it up and you like, hey, look, I'm rich. And meanwhile, the gold guy behind you is like, ha, sucker.
Well, that can be called notching.
Yes.
Basically, you set it for a if you imagine a scale, you know, one notch on that scale. Or some of the more sophisticated metal detectors will allow you to set more than one notch.
Right. So that way you could look for both silver and gold and you'd say, ha ha, Mr. Smarty Gold Pants.
Now that's the VLF. The pulse induction metal detector.
It's a little bit different.
Yeah, it uses only a single coil, or it can use multiple coils working at the same time.
Yeah, but these are coils that don't have that shielding. It's not like you have a transmitter coil and then a receiver coil.
Right.
And all of these coils are generating very quick bursts of electricity, which of course creates a very sharp magnetic wave.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's just a really quick spike. And then what will happen is that magnetic wave, if it encounters a metal object, again, that metal object will generate its own magnetic wave. And the metal detector will pick up on that. And it's kind of like an echo, right?
It's kind of like an echo, right?
Thank you. So if you think about it that way, it's like sending out a signal and waiting for something to bounce back.
Yeah, but it's very fast. I mean, the average is about 100 pulses per second.
Yeah.
Which is, yeah, fairly rapid.
Pretty quick. And then you're looking for the reflected pulse.
Yes.
Which is what the object that is under the ground or wherever, that's the pulse that it generates in response to the one that came from the metal detector.
Yeah. Now it uses these types of metal detectors use a sampling circuit, basically trying to determine whether it's actually metal that you're finding or something else, some other type of magnetic field that is interfering with the signal. And it's basically judging that based on the amount of time it takes to reflect.
Right. Yeah, that's another thing that we should point out is that metal detectors can encounter lots of different kinds of interference.
Sure.
Not just the composition of the soil, but let's say that you happen to cross over where an electrical cable has been buried.
Mm-hmm.
That could cause a problem. Like your metal detector might think that, hey, look, there's gold in them thar hills. And
truth, you've hit the mother lode.
Yeah, and truth, what you've hit is the power line, which...
You don't want to dig that up.
No, it could result in everything from death, which is in the metal detection biz we call a bad thing.
Yes.
Or it could result in... Or it could result in an entire region losing electricity. That's also a bad thing.
Yeah, that's a very good point. I mean, these metal detectors are not only incredibly useful, they can be a lot of fun. A lot of hobbyists love them.
Yeah.
But you do have to be very, very careful. And it's good to know the territory, to quote a certain musical. Nice. But yeah, I mean, you need to know
the territory.
You got to know where you're digging. Because you really could get hurt.
Hey guys, it's Jonathan from the present day butting in here. I was just wanting to talk to you for a second because my ad detector is going off. Looks like we got a sponsor read. Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward. Inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit att.com/hypergig for details.
Working remotely, where you are shouldn't dictate what you do. Work from the road by turning your vehicle into a reliable high-speed data Wi-Fi hotspot with AT&T in-car Wi-Fi. On the network that covers more roads than any other carrier, take your work on the road and AT&T will be there to keep you connected. Connect up to 10 devices and stream conference calls, finish up that presentation, or answer last-minute emails. Why wait? Go to att.com/in-car Wi-Fi today for free trial eligibility. Based on independent third-party data, number of devices varies by manufacturer. Always pay careful attention to the road and don't drive distracted. Wi-Fi hotspot intended for passenger use only when vehicle is in operation. Compatible device and vehicle required.
When you think about the future, what kind of technology do you envision? Whatever the future holds, artificial intelligence will undoubtedly be at the heart of it all. Join Graham Class as he hosts Season 2 of Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast from Ruby Studio in partnership with Intel. Explore the future of technology that's rapidly evolving our world today with the help of AI. There is still so much work and research needed to fully understand the power and potential of AI, and Intel is at the forefront of implementing AI in revolutionary technology that's changing the world we live in for the better. In each episode, Graham interviews the minds transforming medicine and healthcare, retail, entertainment, personal computing, and more, while pioneering new uses for AI in these spaces. Tune in every other Tuesday and explore the latest technology that's changing our world today and creating a more accessible tomorrow. Listen to Technically Speaking, an Intel podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
From BBC Radio 4, Britain's biggest paranormal podcast is going on a road trip.
I thought in that moment, oh my God, we've summoned something from this board.
This is Uncanny USA.
He says, somebody's in the house, and I screamed.
Listen to Uncanny USA wherever you get your BBC podcasts, if you dare.
Today I'm going to give you some straightforward advice on how to deal with naughty kids. How about instead of timeouts, time ins? Time for you to start paying some bills. I'm J.B. Smoove, and that was a full episode of my new podcast, Straightforward, inspired by guaranteed straightforward pricing from AT&T Fiber. Get what you want without the complicated. AT&T Fiber, live like a gigillionaire. Available wherever you get your podcast. Limited availability in select areas. Visit AT&T.com/hypergig for details.
So we have an integrator.
Yes.
On these pulse induction metal detectors.
Yes.
And that's reading the signals from the sampling circuit and converting them to DC.
Right.
That's
direct not current.
Yeah. I was going to say not the District of Columbia.
Yeah. Not a comic book publisher either.
And that's feeding into the audio circuit. And that is what beeps.
Yeah. That's the stuff what beeps mm-hmm. for the pulse indicator.
The thing is, these are very good at detecting metal, but they're not very good at discriminating between different types of metal.
Right. So you're not going to get the level of precision that you would get with a VLF metal detector.
Right.
But, you know, you got to remember that these different types of detectors, while some of them may work in conditions that others do not, there's also a price range here as well.
Oh, yes. Yes. Now, yeah, the beat frequency oscillator metal detectors can be fairly affordable.
Yes.
They also use two coils, but one is in the search head and the other one is actually in the control box.
Yep.
They're connected to an oscillator that is pulsing many, many times per second, thousands of times per second. And the
frequency of the one that's inside the control box and the one that's inside the actual detector are slightly offset. They're not in sync.
Mm-hmm.
Or Backstreet Boys.
Or 98 Degrees.
Oh, you got the other one I was going to do. Menudo.
Well, ironically enough to our current part of the conversation, they create radio waves.
Yes.
Then the receiver in the control box picks that up and plays tones to let you know when you're coming into range of metal.
Right, because what's happening is that when the metal encounters this electromagnetic field, that is going to alter that radio wave. And mm-hmm. so what you're really listening for are changes in the sound that you're hearing. The change in the sound indicates that you have encountered something that is generating this magnetic field because of the one you're generating.
They know what they're going through.
Detectors killed the radio star.
But like I said, these are a lot cheaper to manufacture. And therefore, if you are interested in getting your feet wet in the metal detector thing as a hobby, you yep. might consider this, but they're far less accurate as far in terms of being able to give you any kind of discrimination or any real control. They actually use these are the types of metal detectors that you the handheld detectors that they use at the airport.
Right.
You know, if you walk through the scanner and then that's the type they use in the wand because they don't really need to know whether it's gold or iron.
They just need to know.
Want to know what it is that you've got.
Now, once something beeps, then they can say, all right, well, let's see what that is. They don't necessarily need to know immediately.
Right.
And the metal detectors, the frames at the airport, they work on essentially the same principles we've talked about here.
Yeah.
They're generating electromagnetic fields, which, of course, has brought up some concerns with people who may have devices, like medical devices, that could react to electromagnetic fields. That's why you'll occasionally hear about folks like that having to go through like a pat-down security as opposed to a metal detector, just because of the concern that it could interfere with a medical device.
Right, right. Now, with all of these, what you're going to find depends on the type of metal detector, the type of metal that you're looking for, about how big it is, the kind of makeup of the soil, any kind of interference from other objects, and the halo, which is basically, you know, if you have a piece of metal in the soil, it's going to read a little bit differently. It's going to it's going to register as larger than it actually is.
Yeah, it's one of those interesting things. Yeah,
I could see your halo.
I was trying so hard not to go into that. We've done so many song references in this podcast. It's crazy. This might be our most intense.
The funny thing
number
is
number of references per minute.
Other than the first one, none of them have been metal.
That's true. That's true. The halo effect is really an interesting thing. It's just the fact that certain kinds of metal objects can actually increase the conductivity of the soil that's around them. And the longer that object, those particular objects have been in the ground, the greater that conductivity change can be. So then, you might be like, hey, there's a Sherman tank down there or something. And it just turns out that there's another object that's been down there and has affected the conductivity of the soil. It's pretty phenomenal.
If you have a Sherman tank buried in your backyard, please give me a call. I'm interested to see
it. Well, not anymore.
Yeah. You think about it. It makes sense. If you have, let's say the aforementioned screw, and it's been there for a couple years.
Yeah.
Let's say iron.
Yeah.
And it's beginning to rust. It's beginning to disintegrate and,
you know. It can change the conductivity.
Sure.
Depending on it also depends on the
soil. It's rained and, you know,
Yeah, it really depends upon the composition of the soil itself as well.
Yep.
So, if there's a lot of iron content in the soil, that's going to cause some issues when you're doing metal detection. You're going to get a lot of interference, and you just have to factor that in. Doesn't mean that the metal detector is going to be useless. It just means that you have to kind of adjust your expectations and listen for bigger changes in the soil content and kind of ignore the noise. Separate the signal from the noise.
Yeah. I would argue that it probably takes some personal discrimination, too. You really need to get out there and practice if you're going to start using doing metal detecting as a hobby. And maybe even trying it with things that you know what they are. You know, some coins, a ring, a screwdriver, you know, something that you...
Yeah, hammer.
Hammers, you know, Sherman tanks.
Stuff that you just... tend to run across in your general area.
Well, you never know what you're going to find when you're out in a field somewhere.
Yeah.
And if you can identify what they are, you can get a sense of what different metals sound like, get a feel for how your metal detector works.
Yeah, how sensitive it is.
And how sensitive it is. Mm-hmm. It can be a lot of fun to, as you were talking about before, like going to battlefields. Of course, I imagine probably all the major battlefields have been picked pretty clean at this point.
You would think, but it's amazing what you can stumble across.
Sure.
It's one of those things where it may require a phenomenal amount of luck.
Sure.
My experience, there's no such thing as luck. But it may require a phenomenal series of coincidences in order for you to stumble across the right section to find something significant. But really, you never know. It's amazing to me how something that you would think, oh, well, this has got so much traffic. There's no way there's anything of significance can be found there. And yet, like 5 years later, you'll find that the find of the century. How'd that happen?
Well, yeah. And you don't know what's around in places that, might be of value. I mean, again, people find.
I'm still searching for Blackbeard's treasure.
All kinds of stuff out.
Anytime I go to the Carolinas.
Out in normal places
maybe
that you
I
might
should actually go to the
every day
beach instead of Finland. That's probably part of the problem.
Yeah.
But, you know, Charleston is so nice. I just like to, you know, spend some time there. And
yeah, people even use them for prospecting.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and for coin shooting.
Now, if you do want to use your metal detector for prospecting, there are some things you need to remember. First, you have to grow a beard of at least a foot in length, and it needs to be gray and grizzly.
He's gun punchy, ladies and gentlemen.
Second, you need to be able to say things like "Con Sarnet" with a straight face. And then third, the most important thing about being a prospector is you have to develop your crazy prospector dance when you strike gold. Very important.
Yeah. Coin shooting is the practice of looking for coins after an outdoor event.
Yeah.
Like a wedding
or like Woodstock.
Yeah. Or Woodstock.
Yeah, you go to some big outdoor conference and you take a metal detector and you start looking for change. The thing is that if you live in an area where this sort of stuff goes on a regular basis, you could presumably pay off that metal detector after, you know, a few visits to these areas once the concert is over or game or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, and because we're usually talking about change, you know, some nickels or dimes or quarters or whatever money you use, because
right.
I know it's not all just United States folks.
Euros, loonies.
Well, if you find euros, you're rich. Because I think a euro is equivalent to like $17 at this point. That's a gross exaggeration. But the point being that, you know, yeah, you could conceivably pay off your metal detector's cost after a few visits, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But although a lot of people just enjoy this as a hobby. Like it's a way to get outside. You're enjoying time outdoors and you're finding stuff which just brings you a level of satisfaction, right?
Yeah.
I mean, it's that whole treasure hunting aspect. You know, when we discover something, there's an element of satisfaction there that you can't put a monetary value on.
Woohoo!
Yeah. You know, you're just like, hey, look, I found some money. Woo! And yeah, there's an enjoyment level there that goes beyond, oh, and it's worth, you know, 75 cents.
Yes.
Although the 75 cents is always nice to have. 75 cents more than you had, but when you showed up at the field. So,
yeah, I keep wondering actually why the value of the giant jar of class rings, you'd figure they'd cash that in.
Yeah.
I mean, for more than just selling metal detectors. Maybe that's more lucrative than selling off some of those class rings.
Yeah, prying out all the little jewels, melting that stuff down, and then just making yourself a bar of gold.
It's worth its weight in gold.
All right, guys, hope you enjoyed that classic episode of Tech Stuff, How Metal Detectors Work. If you would like to contact the show, maybe you've got a topic in mind, maybe you've got some questions or concerns, maybe you just want to say, hey, Jonathan, you're doing a nice job. Well, go to our website. That's techstuffpodcast.com. There you're going to find all the different ways you can contact me or the show. You'll also find links to our merchandise store. And remember, every purchase you make goes to help the show and more. So go check that out. We're really proud of it. Tari's been working hard on that website for a while. So I know she's very excited that you guys are going to get a chance to interact on it. She's just giving me a big smile. She's dancing. Look at her go. Gosh, Tari. Wow. She just did the floss. Now she's doing the hand jive. It's amazing. Thanks, Tari. Well, guys, that's all for me. I'll talk to you again really soon.
For more on this and thousands of other topics, visit HowStuffWorks.com.
I'm Katya Adler, host of The Global Story. Over the last 25 years, I've covered conflicts in the Middle East, political and economic crises in Europe, drug cartels in Mexico. Now I'm covering the stories behind the news all over the world in conversation with those who break it. Join me Monday to Friday to find out what's happening, why, and what it all means. Follow The Global Story from the BBC wherever you listen to podcasts.
This is Malcolm Gladwell from Revisionist History. eBay Motors is here for the ride. With some elbow grease, fresh installs, and a whole lot of love, you transformed 100,000 miles and a body full of rust into a drive that's all your own. Brake kits, LED headlights, whatever you need, eBay Motors has it. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, it's guaranteed to fit your ride the first time, every time, or your money back. Plus, at these prices, you're burning rubber, not cash. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
There are some things that are too good to keep a secret. Like how your Amex Platinum card helps you have the perfect trip. I'd like to check into the Centurion Lounge. Or how it seems like you always get those hard-to-snag tables.
Ooh, yum.
And how you get the most out of select can't-miss events. With access to the Centurion Lounge, Resi Priority Notify, and Amex card member benefits at select events, you'll have to share. That's the powerful backing of American Express. Terms apply. Learn more at americanexpress.com/withAmex.
Are you looking for the perfect move-in ready home this spring season? Now's the time to buy at Fisher Homes. For a limited time only, enjoy below market interest rates starting at 5.375% APR, 6.139% APR. With these exclusive lower rates, you can save hundreds on a move-in ready home and start enjoying the benefits of homeownership even faster. Schedule your personal tour with one of our new home specialists at fisherhomes.com and make this spring the season you find your perfect home sweet home. Financing provided by Victory Mortgage, LLC, NMLS 461249, Equal Housing Lender.